the origin of confusion, I would say, it stretches way back to Genesis 3.
Pastor Trevor Sutton, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion.
Satan tried to inject falsehood into the true word that God had spoken. But in that little statement, did God actually say this? Suddenly we see this swirl of confusion coming into our world.
Learn more about Clearly Christian at issuesetc.org.
My brothers, my sisters, the clock is ticking faster. My dream, we who live for truth, for love, the moment has come to take our rightful place in the world where we wizards were free. Join me or die.
The wizarding and non-wizarding worlds have been at peace for over a century. Grindelwald wants to see that peace destroyed.
You want me to hunt him down? To kill him? Dumbledore, why can't you go?
I cannot move against Grindelwald. It has to be you.
That's part of a trailer for the movie Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. We're going to be talking about that movie. It is a prequel, one of several prequels to the famous Harry Potter movies. It tells some of the backstory of some of the characters. And in this case, this latest Fantastic Beasts film engages in a little social justice warrior-ish kind of activity, but not in a way entirely expected. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be reviewing the movie Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Pastor Ted Geese will be our guest. Dr. Ryan Anderson joins us after that from the Heritage Foundation. We'll talk about his thoughts on a New York Times op-ed column on transgender transition. Pastor Hans Feeney will be our guest to talk about Twitter's new speech rules regarding transgenderism. He has taken them apart on Twitter, and he's written about them on The Federalist as well. Then in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Dr. Ken Cherb joins us to reintroduce us to the season of Advent. Joining us to review the movie Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
So this is another prequel to the Harry Potter series. Will the diehard Harry Potter fans who just want to re-enter that world of wizards and magic and magical beasts, will they be somewhat disappointed by this installment and its social justice message?
Some of them will be, I'm sure. I think that there's a bunch of different things going on. So one thing is that you're going to have part of the audience, because Harry Potter has a very broad audience. So part of your audience is not going to be too happy with some of the social justice warrior kind of progressive stuff that's in the film. Then you're going to have people who are quite in-depthly, you know, engage with Harry Potter, and they may just find that it's a little convoluted, like the whole story. They may walk out kind of scratching their heads. And then the super diehard people are going to have maybe their own issues on top of those issues, which would be related to retconning, which is where they include things that then change previous stuff, so that affect the canon of the whole thing. So I guess this is kind of like abrogation. So in this case, you know, J.K. Rowling has put some stuff in with the Dumbledore family that, for really, really in-depth, detail-oriented Harry Potter fans, they're going to go, well, this all messes with the whole thing. So either the stuff that's included in the film is a lie and not true, or if it is retconning, it wrecks other things that were previously written and included in previous films. So I think that there's a number of different ways that people might be left scratching their head or not exactly 100% happy with this film.
In addition to all of that, you say that this film really expects a lot of its audience in terms of just knowing where you are in the plot, knowing who the characters are and why they're doing and saying what they're doing. What do you mean by that specifically?
Well, this is set in the 1920s, so it's all stuff that happens prior to the Harry Potter books and films that people first were introduced to. So there are characters in this that will later show up in Harry Potter films and books. So there's that one character in it that is a lady who then turns into a snake. And if you don't really know exactly that how all of that story works out, you might not know that that's the snake that's Voldemort's snake in the Harry Potter books and movies. So that's like one of those little details. So there's that kind of stuff. But then it also really expects you to know things that aren't even really explicitly, like in real exposition, explained in this film that you would have to know from outside of it. So, and it's not that the film doesn't like exposition. Like the film has, even at the beginning of the film, there's like a real kind of like, last time on Harry Potter kind of like a heavy exposition little segment that explains everything from the last film and how it's going to bounce into this one. So it's not that it's not interested in that, or it's not that J.K. Rowling doesn't include that kind of stuff, but they don't use really clear exposition to explain Dumbledore and Dumbledore's sexuality, I guess. And, you know, this is a kid's movie, so what does it matter that Dumbledore has a particular sexuality at all, you might ask. But in 2007, way back then, at a Q&A, she was asked a question about Dumbledore, and then as a response to the question, she said that she thought that Dumbledore was gay, and then there was silence, and then the place erupted into applause. So now that is coming to the fore in this film, but they have to kind of tell you all that stuff without, with very clear, direct exposition, just saying so. So it's so you have to kind of remember that that's the case. So when we went into the film, I remembered that, but my wife Michelle didn't remember that. And then afterwards, we had to have a conversation, the two of us, to make that all like click, as it were. So that's another kind of element of what people are expected to know going into the film.
And you say that this particular choice on the part of Royal Rowling to make the backstory of a key character in the Harry Potter novels, to make him gay and then to build on that in this story, really affects kind of the whole franchise and the whole direction of this story too. How's that?
Well, this is where it's going to get a little spoilery for people. So if you haven't seen it yet and don't know where this is all going and you'd like to be surprised, I suppose, then you may want to take a moment to stop here and come back later. But essentially, there's a couple different ways you could do this. So it seemed as though, the question of diversity, J.K. Rowling was being more and more pressured about diversity within Harry Potter, not just like racial diversity or, the place of women or other kinds of things like that within the story, but also then this LGBTQ kind of related stuff. So here you have the character of Dumbledore, who was the headmaster for Hogwarts School in the Harry Potter books and films. And now he's been, made into a character who's gay. So how could this unfold? It could unfold like this. He's gay, but it has nothing to do with the plot. It just happens to be his thing, right? Or he's gay. And then the question is, well, who is he romantically involved in and how would that impact the plot? Right, like, so now that's another thing. So that you have this character of Newt Scamander, who is played by Eddie Redmayne, and that is kind of supposed to be your central character, right? And he's involved in this kind of unfolding plot, and he's kind of being dragged reluctantly into it. So you could have it where Dumbledore has feelings towards him, but that's not the case, what they do here. So what they do instead is that you have the villain of Grindelwald. And again, this is one of those details because there was something in the other Harry Potter books and films about Grindelwald being kind of somebody from Dumbledore's past. But here they take that villain, and the villain is the character that Dumbledore had as a teenager, this, you know, how do they put it in the movie? They put it, you know, you guys were as close as brothers, and Dumbledore says, we were closer than that. So you have this kind of thing. So now you have Dumbledore at Hogwarts pitted against the villain of this new series, Grindelwald, played by Johnny Depp. And the two of them were romantically linked as gay lovers, as teenagers, apparently. And now that has an impact on the whole story, because in the film itself, people are being put into a position where they have to choose which side they're going to be on. So this is very much like Voldemort in the other Harry Potter films. And you have that kind of, you know, this is low grade Voldemort. You know, he's Voldemort-esque, this Grindelwald character. He's not quite the same as Voldemort, but it's the same sort of thing where you have all of the wizards and witches on one side and the other ones on the other side, and they're pitted against each other, and people have to decide what side they're going to be on. And it kind of turns out that somehow, some way, this is like a gay ex-lover spat of some sort, and it's gripping the whole of the magic world within this Harry Potter story of the Fantastic Beasts. And that's how this then ends up having an impact on the whole entire film and all of the rest of the films.
There is also, I take it, an element of the plot wherein who can marry who becomes a question. Is it, the cynic that I am, a thinly veiled reference to Obergefell and gay marriage?
Yeah, you know, you do have that in here too. And this is a way in which they bring in some previous characters from the first Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them film, the first one. And you have the character of Queenie, and then the character of Jacob. And Jacob is a nomadge, which is the American term for a muggle, somebody who does not use magic. And Queenie is the sister of Tina Goldstein, who's Newt Scamander's romantic interest. And Queenie is one who's a witch who reads people's minds and stuff. But she takes a liking to Jacob, and the two of them become romantically involved, but they're really not allowed to be married because one's from the magical world and one's from the non-magical world. And this is something that's not allowed, apparently, in the traditional magical, you know, hierarchy and society of things. That's a part of this, is their romance, and they end up on opposite sides of this conflict as a result of it, even though they both love each other. And that's kind of an interesting element of the film. The reason why I thought it was interesting is that the one that wants to overturn all of that is the villain. So Grindelwald wants to overturn the traditional role of everything and make it so that that's possible for these people in these kinds of situations to get together, which, you know, but he's the villain. So that's kind of odd. So this is where things start to get kind of convoluted, because that would seem like it would be the sort of thing that social justice warriors would want to not have in the villain side of the checklist. And yet there it is over there. The question is whether or not the character of Grindelwald is just saying that like a politician to get elected, as it were, quote unquote, or if he has any desire to really do it. Because the other part is that he seems to want to set up a situation where, you know, the magic world comes into the open and becomes like an aristocracy, and the non-magical people become just like brute human labor to do the things that he wants to have done. So that seems to be his underlying plot that he's working on. So this is all just kind of in this gigantic mess of a convoluted story.
I'm curious about, of course, the Harry Potter series has made superstars. There's no doubt about that. But if I recall, while it did have some genuinely talented and, in other respects, a kind of well-known actors, but not like American celebrities
right
at the time. I mean, it has world-class actors. in the original Harry Potter series, but they were largely unknown to us until they appeared in their characters here in kind of celebrity-strewn America. This one has Johnny Depp in it. And the first time I saw that Johnny Depp was in this film, I thought, you don't bring on Johnny Depp unless either he really wanted to do this film or you're trying to give this thing a little boost.
Yeah, he shows up at the end of the first of these Fantastic Beasts films because Colin Farrell's character is revealed to have had a glamour on him the whole time, and he was really underneath all of it, Grindelwald, played by Johnny Depp. So he did show up at the end of the first of these Fantastic Beasts films, but here, you know, he's got the whole film to be the villain, as it were. So and the film does have a couple other people in it. It's got Zoe Kravitz, so that's Lenny Kravitz's daughter with, what's her name? The girl from The Cosby Show. At any rate, she's in it, and she's been in other films that we've talked about along the way. There's some people are kind of on their way up. Eddie Redmayne has been, did he even win an Academy Award at one point? He's the one that plays Newt Scamander, the main character in this. Or at least he was up for Best Actor for a film where he was... Was it called The Danish Girl or something, where he was a transgendered guy? So he's in there. Jude Law also is now playing Dumbledore, and he does a good job as Dumbledore, and he brings a little bit of star power to it too. But there's just so much going on, and probably too many characters, too many threads, and it's all kind of a bit of a jumbled mess.
If you didn't see the first one and only vaguely remember the Harry Potter trilogy from your teens or childhood, are you going to be able to enter this film and know what's going on?
Oh boy, if that's you, don't do this to yourself. You're going to be feeling it. It's, you know, of all the Harry Potter movies, this one is probably the most listless, kind of drab kind of film. So, you know, like the Fantastic Beasts, there's some in the film. The magic is kind of like rubbing off and not in the good way. I think that you have to be pretty fully invested in Harry Potter to enjoy this.
Does it recapture for those who want to? And that's a lot of these prequels and spinoffs are about nostalgia. Does it recapture the nostalgia that many desire when returning to those original books?
I don't think it does. I think its focus is off from where it had been. I thought maybe they would do three of these movies, but I think now they're going to do like five of them, I heard. So, you know, the question is fatigue, right? The other thing is that when you start to bring in all of these progressive ideas that are so full of conflict, like in our political lives and in the rest of the world we live in, into these films, you really start to alienate portions of your audience, and then even that other audience might not like the way this is done. Like, I think that people in the LGBTQ community probably would like it to be more overt, you know, in this film. So you may put some of them off too. So you end up kind of shrinking your audience when you start to go down this road. And there's so many people who I think that the all the fantasy stuff and sci-fi stuff and whatever, a lot of people, superhero stuff, a lot of people would kind of retreat into that as an escape to escape from all of this other stuff that was going on in the world. And as the other stuff that's going on in the world, like this stuff, seeps into it all, then they're taking away the place that people went to escape to. And I think we're not far away from a giant sci-fi fantasy superhero bubble that's just going to go pop. And then as soon as these movies start tanking and not making any money because they're expensive to make, you're going to see all of this get wrapped up and folded up like a card table real fast.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Pastor Ted Geese is a regular guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Thanks, Ted.
Thanks.
When we come back, Ryan Anderson joins us from the Heritage Foundation. There was a New York Times op-ed column on a young man who is attempting to transition, at least in his mind, from male to female. He is transgender. He knows it isn't going to make him happy. He knows it might make things worse, but still he wants to do it. We'll talk about that tragedy with Dr. Ryan Anderson after this. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? If you plan to do some online Christmas shopping on Amazon, you can help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Just go to smile.amazon.com, sign into your Amazon account, enter Lutheran Public Radio into the charitable organization search field, and click Select. A percentage of your purchase will be donated to Issues Etc. Smile.amazon.com and choose Lutheran Public Radio. Thanks for your support.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What are some of the most misunderstood and confused aspects of Christianity, and how can we respond? Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion, is the Issues Etc. book of the month for November. Clearly Christian is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Clearly Christian.